Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Today's video is brought to you by Predictable Revenue's service LinkedIn Outbound. Find out how we can leverage and grow your existing LinkedIn network to book meetings into your calendar at the link below. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by Lisa Earl McLeod, the founder of McLeod & Moore, and we're talking about how to jumpstart your sales in tough times. And one question that you need to be asking in every sales review to make sure that you're going to have predictable revenue. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Great to be here with you today.
I'm really excited. I've heard you talk a lot about the crisis being the death of transactional sales. And I'm excited to talk to you about that idea. So why don't you help me understand what you mean?
So we were already seeing a move. You know, we work with sales teams all over the world, and we were already seeing a move away from transactional sales. That salespeople don't want to be that, you know, one and done person. They want a more trusted advisor with their customers. They want to be partners with them. But what's happened now, and it happened seemingly overnight in the course of a couple of weeks, is it wasn't just the salespeople wanting this and the companies that were the suppliers. What happened overnight was customers no longer have time for transactional sales. Customers got really clear, really fast. Are you here to help me? Are you here to try and close me? And if you're here to help me, I want to talk to you. But if you're only here to try and close me, I'm done with you.
Totally fair. It's interesting. This current crisis put a lot of pressure on everything and everybody. So if you're a rep that was just in it for the close, it becomes a lot more obvious when dollars mean so much more.
Right. And what's ironic is you have these two competing forces, and it puts all the pressure on the sellers and the sales team. On the one hand, you have customers saying, I don't have time for transactional sales. I don't have time for your 52 slides about your product, because I had one VP say to me, what was annoying in an in-person call is unbearable on a Zoom. So on the one hand, the customers are saying, know me, know my business, be helpful. But on the other hand, you have the salespeople whose manager is in their ear. Close it, close it, close it. We need revenue now. You might lose your job. You can't feed your family. So we have these two seemingly opposing forces, but in reality, it's a sequencing thing. If the seller can quiet that little fear monster and quiet that voice that says, close it, close it, close it now, do whatever you have to do. You know, as Amy Cuddy says, fake it till you become it, and lean into the customer. And whatever is going on with them, the data tells us you will close more sales.
It's totally true. I mean, if you think about it, there are so many more companies, or there are a lot of companies that are under an immense amount of pressure, mm-hmm. right? And that starts with, you know, the owners, the board of directors, the C-level, and it trickles all the way down. And it goes from C-level, VP level, director level, manager level, to frontline sales, to frontline people. Mm-hmm. And the trick here is, like, everybody's feeling pressure, but the salespeople are the frontline interface with the customers.
They are. And so it's really challenging, because you'll have someone at the top of a company that says, we want to keep our pipeline in place, and we want to take care of our people, and we want to do right by the community. And they'll say that at the top, and they will earnestly mean it. But when that comes down, the thing that lands on the rep's head is not be kind, be empathetic, be nice. What lands on the rep's head is meet your quota.
Totally. And I think everybody's getting that up and down the chain. But if I'm in a sales role, and I've been in this a lot of times, a lot of that feels like there's this mountain of pressure that's resting upon you. Mm-hmm. And I'd say one of the tough sort of behaviors that can come out of this is that sort of commission breath. And so I'm wondering, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody that's listening, like, I think this is sort of one of the key pieces we're going to be talking about today. You know, if you're under a lot of pressure, if I'm under a lot of pressure, if all the quota, if the whole sort of pipeline of the company rests on my mm-hmm. shoulders, you're on your shoulders, how do I avoid getting commission breath?
Yeah. Well, you were the one that introduced me to that phrase, commission breath. And it has now become part of my vernacular, because I did not realize how many times I breathed it on people myself, and it's been blown in my face a lot. And so I love that phrasing, commission breath, because what it implies, if you think about like someone that has a certain kind of breath, it's based on what's going on inside them. It's either what they just ate or something inside them. And what I would suggest in the case of a sales rep is it's both. The thing they just ate was their manager saying, close it, close it, close it. And the thing that's going on inside them is a deep overriding fear that they will never sell anything again. But I'm gonna give you the breath mint for that and solve the underpinning problem. And the reality is when you say there's a lot of pressure, there is. And I'm reminded of a book that I read years ago, and I'm old, so other people might not remember this, but I had the chance to meet Billie Jean King, who was an amazing pioneer in sports. And she wrote a book called Pressure is a Privilege. And I will never forget that. And just how much pressure she was under and her ability to say it is a privilege to stand in this space. And one of the ways that she could handle it was having a system. So that's what I want to talk about today, is how you can have a system to where the pressure does not go away, but you have some tactics that you can fall back on. And one of the ways that you quiet that commission breath, like every time I hear it, I just laugh so hard. And so one of the ways that you quiet commission breath is you have to take your mind off yourself. And you have to put your mind into your customer. And to do this, most sellers have been taught to do this. Think about the customer and what they need, but I'm going to take it a step further. You have to park your solution at the door and really lean into Google your customer and think about what is their CEO saying? How is that landing down on my client, on my contact? What is the most compelling issue in their business? Don't connect the dots yet to yourself. Get yourself in their world. And this thought exercise of thinking about the other will make you less fearful. And it's really rooted in a lot of science. If you, one of the things, we have a new version of Selling with Noble Purpose coming out this fall. And one of the things that we did as part of the research was we actually interviewed a number of people that had faced really dramatic, scary personal situations, including some members of the military. And the way that they say the fear doesn't go away, but the way that they are able to act in the face of it is commitment to a cause bigger than themselves and commitment to the team. And I mean, we talked to some people who have been in some rough spots, and I think if all I have to do is go out and sell something, I think I can get over myself. And so your commitment to the cause bigger than yourself is not your company, it's your customer. Because they're in just as dire straits, or they're in just as tumultuous a time as you are. And so your commitment to seeing them in that spot and helping them through it, that's where you step out of starting to quiet your fear, and your commission breath goes down a little.
Gotcha. And if you're listening and you're like, okay, well, what's a pithy way that I could summarize this and add in some of my favorite swear words?
Oh, you mean I was too long and didn't swear enough? Okay.
No, I just liked it. I'm like, hey, if I can summarize, we put the explicit rating on there because I didn't want to have to worry about swearing and not swearing or forgetting to swear. But if I'm putting a pithy curse word in here, it's if closing is your North Star, you're fucked.
That's true. You are absolutely fucked. See, I can say it too. Because what happens is you picture a seller that said, if I ask a lot of sales teams and a lot of sales executives, what's the purpose of your sales team? The answer that I usually get is to close business. Well, now let's flip that from the customer's perspective. And if someone's coming in and all they want to do is close you, they're not helpful. And we have no time for that now. But if you flip it and you say, my purpose is to improve life for customers, it doesn't mean you give away your services. It doesn't mean you sell low margin stuff. It doesn't mean you provide a bunch of stuff that's outside your scope, but it's the mental framework. It's like the difference between me saying, I want to close the deal here, versus dating saying, I want to make the other person feel like $1 million. I want to be someone who's, people are excited to be around. Which person's going to attract more people? And it's the same thing. You got to get your mind. And one of the things you have to know too is your motives are more transparent on a Zoom call than they were in person. Because you don't have all the little niceties and all the little clues. and all the little, hey, how's it going? Making the other person feel comfortable. So when you're just on that closing, they're going to read that. And it is absolutely repelling to them because they're in a crisis. They don't want someone who's not focused on them.
It's interesting because if you think about it, I guess, just thinking about like the bandwidth of communication, right? Mm-hmm. In person is obviously the highest bandwidth. And there's so much that's happening. There's all this nuance. There's these like the positioning of your, like, am I facing you? Am I facing away? Right. Am I looking at my phone? Am I feet pointing the other direction? Signaling like I either have to pee or I need to get out of this meeting.
Right.
And you lose all of that. And also now that we're in a Zoom call, like you and I are face to face and I'm pretty sure you're not checking your email. But on a Zoom call, sometimes the buyer has their video off. And so you lose that. You lose so much.
But they are reading your intent better on a Zoom call than they could in person. Because in person, we've got all these socialized behaviors that make us attractive and things like that. And they're just natural, especially if you're in sales. But on a Zoom call, what you want to be thinking before you get on that call is, who is this person? What's going on with them? How could I be the most potential help to them? And you think about it. I always say, compare from the customer's standpoint. Imagine there are two salespeople. They're both about to come call on you. And one of them's boss has said, close it. We need the money. Get this deal. This is a whale. Nail it. And the other one said, I think we can be really helpful to these people. Let's figure out how we can make a difference to them, figure out what their situation is, and go be as helpful as you can. You go. You know, which salesperson would you rather have Zoom up to you? Number two. And the data tells us that. Salespeople who sell with what we call noble purpose, who truly want to make a difference to customers, actually outsell people focused on their own internal targets and quotas.
Yeah. And it's something that I don't have any data on, but I've 100% observed with salespeople I've worked with. And even myself, if I'm feeling really connected to the customer and the product, I have such an easier time.
It's just natural. You don't have that second conversation going on in your head. That's the advantage of selling with noble purpose. When you're trying to sell with quota, you're thinking, you've got like two or three conversations. I need to close this. What are they thinking? What's their response to what I'm thinking? But if I'm just here saying, my noble purpose is to help you, then we are all on the same agenda and the conversation's just fluid.
Gotcha. And so how do I find that?
So when we're working with teams, there's three questions we ask to find what we call your noble purpose. And
I was hoping you were just going to say fortune cookie. Damn it.
No, you know what? Wing it. These are crazy times. You go for that.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of a before and after of a noble purpose. So we worked with this bank and they're very public about it. So I'm allowed to talk about this. Atlantic Capital Bank. They're a commercial bank based in Atlanta, but they're national. And before we started working with them, they would have said, they have a big long mission statement, you know, improve wealth of our shareholders, our employees, the community, blah, 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 all this stuff. But most of their sales team would have said, our purpose is to, you know, generate business, make money. So we worked with them and we asked these three questions and they were, how do you make a difference? How do you do it differently than your competition? And on your best day, what do you love about your job? And so we asked that of the senior leadership team and we culled together all the information. And it was obvious to us through this that they were all about prosperity. And it was a word a couple of them used several times. And so the noble purpose that we landed on was we fuel prosperity. And the wordsmithing matters, but what also matters was the deep soul searching about what are you really about? So it's not just a tagline. So when every salesperson goes out, they are there to help that customer fuel prosperity. Like that's their job. And so it's been about a year since they did it. Their earnings went up. They were voted a best bank to work for. And this can apply in any situation. But what was interesting was a lot of the banks are getting grief for their response to COVID. People at this bank were freaking rock stars. Oh, we're allowed to say curse words. They were fucking rock stars. They got payroll protection for every single one of their clients that applied that qualified. Like every single one. Their whole team rallied. They worked all night. They said, we're going to find a way. They cross-trained a bunch of people. And the CEO said, it was who we already were, but that work we did on getting clear around our purpose, we knew immediately what to do. And that's what it does for you. It points you as a North Star in good times, and it is a lifeline in times of uncertainty.
That's amazing. And I just want to pause here for a sec, because this is, as a salesperson, this is always the first thing that I was trying to figure out, is like, what's in it for the customer? But this is such a better way of framing up and thinking about it. Because it's great if your organization has this and can communicate it. But if you don't, we got to do it ourselves.
You can absolutely do it. So that would be, to anyone listening to this, do not wait. Do not say that, oh, my boss and my CEO. You are in charge of your mindset and your interactions with your customers. And in our studies, what we found was, when you look at most sales teams, there's a bell curve. And what we found was the people at the top of the bell curve had this emblazoned in their brains. They could speak with absolute clarity about how they made a difference to customers. And I want to draw your attention to the questions that I asked, and it's really important. This is not what's your value prop. Most value props are very generic, and we've got an end-to-end bloody blah, 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 blah. This is, how do you make a difference to customers? So how do you impact your customers? Are their lives better? Do they do things faster? Do they get home to their families? Well, everybody's home with their family. Do they, you know, what are the things, like, what is the impact? And so if you think about the three questions, they're asked in a very qualitative way, because what we're trying to capture here is not a bunch of fact sheets. Those matter. But what we're trying to capture here is this true soul calling that is going to show up. And I mean, I say soul calling in a bank, in software, what, you know, whatever you do. But the questions are, how do you make a difference, and how do you do it differently? And the how do you do it differently isn't just the rundown of your features. Like in this particular bank, when they said, how do we do it differently? And they said, we care more. Like, we literally care about these businesses that we loan money to. We care about them deeply, and we will go to the ends of the earth. And you got the CEO saying, and this is what I expect you all to do. Like, they become a totally different kind of banker.
And it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to live it. And I think there's organizations that say it. There's organizations that live it.
Yeah.
If you're listening right now, I want you to let's just pause the episode a couple of times here. We're going to do three pauses. I just want, on a score of three, right? And these are binary. So it's 0 or 1. So question one, how confident are you in your answer to how do you make a difference for your customers? Right? So just pause the episode now. Give yourself a score. 0 if you've got a great answer, or 1, 0 if you've got a terrible answer that's like marketing, blah, 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 and you don't really know. And 1 if you got it nailed. Okay. So I'm going to assume you've paused and unpaused. Let's do this again. How do you do it differently? How are you different than your competition in real, actual, lived value? Not just like, here's what marketing says, but this is what's actually different than if you were to buy from competitor B. So pause the episode and give that a think for a sec. Okay. And then on your last one, on your best day, what do you enjoy about your job? Okay. 0 being nothing, I'm hunting for another one. And 1 being you've got a really strong answer that's really connected with the outcomes that you're providing to your customers. And just think on that. If this is the only thing that you take away from the episode, having a 3 out of 3 is probably one of the best things that you can do for yourself as a seller. We got some other good value coming later in the episode, but if you just pause and just go for a walk and think about that, and just take a blank piece of paper or a Google Doc or an Evernote note and really, really spend some time on this. I've never done these three questions exactly like this, but I've done a ton of work on specifically like, how do I make a difference to the customers? And that's the number one thing that I would focus on at every job. How do I do it differently? Like, anyway, so I'll stop because this is Lisa's podcast and not myself. But once we get this clarity, how does that impact, like if a rep, if somebody say they pause the episode and they're like, okay, I'm actually a 1.5 out of 3.
Yeah.
And then they did the work to get themselves to a 3 on 3. What's the impact that that's going to have on their day-to-day job?
So I'll tell you 2 impacts. Salespeople that have this sense of noble purpose that are, and I do want to say, a lot of people will say, oh, we're in the home business, we don't have a purpose. Oh, we sell concrete. We have a concrete company. And I can tell you, they make a difference. They have employee engagement scores off the chart. They have record growth. Because you try living your life without concrete. It's very hard. But
sounds like they've built a really solid foundation
for the business. That was terrible and hilarious.
Sorry.
And their name is Foundation Support Works. So there you go.
Oh, I didn't know that. That makes it even better.
So the reason that you want to answer these questions is I'm going to give you three outcomes that you will get. The first outcome that you will get is that you will show up so much more grounded and clear. You will get immediate receptivity from customers. And I want to be clear, your ability to answer these questions, not recite them back to customers, but have this part of you that I'm here to make a difference, that causes you to be more curious and causes you to lean in. You're not just repeating, I'm here to make a difference. You're actually doing it. So number one, you will show up more grounded in a way that customers respond immediately. The second thing that will happen is it will show in your sales numbers. If we were, depending on your organization, if we were in a non-COVID time and this was like a normal year compared to last year, we see anywhere from 20% increase. We had one company double revenues in like a year when they got everybody on board. In this time, I don't know. Depends on what you sell. It could be even bigger because you're going to stand out more. But there's a third thing that isn't talked about very much, and it's what it does for you and the rest of your life and the impact that it has on you and the way that you live. And I think, you know, one of this crisis is laying bare is that we have an economic model that is not working. We have an economic model that is leaving a lot of people out. And the reason that I'm bringing this up now is there's a number of people that this is causing problems for that aren't being discussed. And I'm not talking about the poor, and I'm not talking about marginalized people, and I'm not talking about all that. That's clear. That is out there. The social scientists talk about it, it's there. But there is a group of people who are actually the people who are very privileged right now. The people who still have jobs, the people who are sheltering in place, who can work at home, that unbeknownst to a lot of them, that this economic system that we have has actually started to strip them of the best part of themselves. And it's because we've been worshiping at the wrong God here. And by that, I mean, what I've seen happen with a lot of people is their lives have become very transactional, and they have defined themselves by how much money they make. And everyone listening to this doesn't need to go quit their job and feed the poor if you want to, that's great. But what happens when you start asking these questions and you start saying, how do I make a difference? How do I do it differently? You reclaim your sense of self. Because if you look at all the people who make a lot of money in the world, in a lot of cases, you see a real absence of joy. And that's the third outcome of this. There is no joy to be found unless you are in the service of others and doing meaningful work. And even if you're that concrete company, the pharma company, the bank, whatever it is, those are things that we need. Even we worked with Dave and Buster's, and I'm eager to get back to fun. You know, their noble purpose was we champion laugh out loud fun. So it doesn't have to be this big giant thing, but if you can start to think this way, and I've given a long answer, so you'll give the short curse word answer of this. If you can start to think about how do I make a difference? How do I do it differently? And what do I love about this? You will get a better response immediately from customers. You will make more money, but you will also experience being more fully alive and more joy than you will with that boot on your neck that says, my only purpose in life is to make money.
I think the best way to summarize this is by stealing from Warren Buffett. And it's basically, it's developing your own internal scorecard.
Yeah.
And that scorecard does not include cash because money is an external thing. But it's, you're sort of reframing your purpose in life as not somebody whose job is to facilitate transactions between companies,
Right.
But it's, I'm trying to help others improve their business. And this is tangibly how I do that.
This is how I do it. Yeah.
And I'm going to optimize for trying to do the most of that as I can.
And the data tells us, I mean, Warren Buffett's a pretty smart guy. The data tells us a couple of things. When you have that different internal scorecard, you become more resilient. Because if you have defined yourself, you said earlier, if your North Star is closing deals, you're up. If you've defined yourself by your ability to close deals, you're going to be in for a real up and down ride here over the next few months. And that's not going to bode well for you. But if you think about your North Star being, I make a difference to my customers, that's always available to you. That's the way, and that's what the CEO of this bank said. He said, we've got something to tether ourselves to that's real and constant. And I want to make the point about money. There are people that are out of work right now that don't know where their next meal is coming from. If in this hierarchy of needs, if that's your need, that is your need, and it is real and it is present. And if you're sheltering in place and you just want to make sure you do a good job so you can keep your nice home for your nice family, that's real too. Money is an important part of our lives. It's how we provide shelter and things for ourselves. It's how we provide for our family. And, you know, nobody serves anybody by, you know, being broke. You're not in the ability to help others when you're there. But having said that, for a lot of the people listening to this who are probably facing that dual focus now, I want to make a difference. And I still really need to make some sales commissions because I'm trying to send a couple kids to college here and it's not free. Those two things are not in conflict. The more you focus on how to make a difference, you get the joy, you get the happiness, you get the meaning, and you will forge, you know, our data tells us, you'll sell bigger deals and you'll sell stickier deals. But the difference here is it's not a technique. It's a true way of being.
For sure. And so much of that is going to come out in how we talk to our customers. But I think another piece of that is how we talk about our current customers that are, you know, currently giving us money and not just the sort of prospects.
Yeah.
And so talk to me a little bit about how you can talk about those without seeming like, I don't know, there's so many wrong ways to tell a story about, hey, we've helped this customer.
Yeah.
How do I get that right?
So I'm glad you brought up story because we all have a story in our head. It's the soundtrack to our lives and you can create a story that serves you very well. So there's two kinds of stories that get told typically in organizations. The first one is the closed story. And the closed story is, come, let's close this big deal. It was $500,000. He's a rock star. Woo! That is a fine story. Great. The second type of story is, Colin sold these bells and whistles, and here's how the customer is using the product. And that's great. That's the product story. Great. That helps people understand how their products are used. But I'm going to tell you the third kind of story. And the third kind of story is a story that rewires your internal talk track. And that is, we sold this to this customer, and here is how it's making a difference to them. They are using our software to speed up everything that they do. And now you got to get personal on these. We call them customer impact stories. Not only is it speeding up everything they do, but I want you to imagine there are 10 people now sitting at their desk, and they are watching things that they used to have to manually do. They're watching it happen at lightning speed. And can you, when I was there, when we sold them that, you should have seen the smiles on their faces. They were so excited. They're going to be able to now go off and do all these innovation projects that they've been wanting to do because now they don't have to do this. That's what we do here. That's what our company does. But see, if I start to tell that story as a seller or as a leader, you who made the sale are just as proud. The product people are just as clear on what happened, but the difference is in the emotion that story generates in the rest of the team. Now, man, we're proud. We make a difference. This is how we do it, babe. Man, we're excited. And you're still just as much of a hero, but now we're all part of the same thing. So it's how you build that story. And that's what most people miss. And so I'll give you an example of how this translates in a personal life.
Just before you jump into the example, yeah. I just want to, like, if you're listening, right, are you Are you like, yeah, I'm on board? Or are you like, it sounds like telling myself a story sounds like a silly way, and there's no way I can reprogram my brain. Just think about that for a second. Yeah. I've gone through quite a bit. I do a lot of reading. I've talked about a lot of books. Positive psychology has had a huge influence on me. Stoic philosophy has had a huge influence on me. And there's one sort of subject out there called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. And what essentially it's, you craft these stories to tell yourself, and it actually will change how your brain works. Our brain is very malleable. This is very possible. And so what you're saying is, by just being intentional about the way that we tell the stories, and internalizing those stories, we can actually change the way that we're selling, the way that we're approaching customers. And so I really love that this is not just some like folksy, oh, I happen to notice a bunch of customers. It's actually based in science.
I'm sorry.
And I'll let you get into your example. Well, now.
I like this. Elizabeth, who's on my team, who's an industrial psychologist, she said, you're building, you're building a neural pathway, but it's like a retaining wall. Like a supporting wall. What are those walls called that are in houses? The supporting walls, the ones that you can't take down.
Retaining walls, I think.
Yeah, the ones that they always have to take down when they want to put in the new kitchen. A load bearing neural pathway. That's what it is. A load bearing neural pathway. And when you tell that story, your brain has been trained by your company, by society, to say, when we close a deal, we get money. That's your load-bearing neural pathway right now. And so what you're doing, that's still there. You are creating a new load-bearing neural pathway that says, when we make a sale, it makes a difference. And that training enables everybody in your organization to show up differently. And this it makes a difference. The example I want to give is, if you've got, a lot of people now are sharing different levels of chores. They don't have house cleaners come in, and it's a fight amongst a lot of people. But so kind of a level one would be your spouse cleans the toilet and you say, thanks, honey, for cleaning the toilet. That's certainly better than not thanking them. But a level two would be, I went in there and I saw that bathroom. I saw that toilet clean. And I felt loved and cared for. And it was everything. It was not just a toilet. The impact it had on me was I felt loved and cared for and relieved and like, we're going to get through this. So thank you. Like, which compliment do you want to get? And how likely are you to clean the toilet again when you're getting that kind of feedback? And so you can do it for your team. But you can do it for yourself. But the question you're always asking is, what in sales is, what impact did this have on the customer? And then what? And then what? Because in sales, what tends to happen is we say, well, then their systems work faster. Or then their concrete was, solid. And then what? And then what? And then what? And you want to get what will build this load-bearing neural pathway for you is if you get to the individual impact it had on people, and you get to the emotions it touched in them, that will be more memorable for you and everyone else than the facts. That's why we remember movies and stories better than we do chemistry from high school.
Yeah, I think the higher up you are, the higher level is like the how you did things, and then the deeper you get in those five whys, it's why you did things. And if you get to the sort of base, at least on the business, like in the business side of things, it all comes down to the P&L, and it's like, did it increase revenue or did it decrease costs?
Right.
And what we're talking about is probably sits a couple layers on top of those and has nothing to do with the P&L.
That's right. That's right. And it's, business is a set of quantitative measures that is driven by qualitative behaviors and emotions. You know, we have this idea that we are going to not get emotional about business, which is total BS. I have yet to meet a CEO said, if there's one thing I wish my people weren't so damn excited. They're too passionate. You know, no one says that. And so we like to think we make decisions logically. We like to think we do everything logically. It's been proven false a bazillion times. Is logic makes you think, emotion makes you act. So what you're trying to get to for yourself is the emotion that will spurn you to act, because in a time of uncertainty, you really need it. What's going to help you quiet your fear monster, push through and make the next call is not, well, I hope I can hit our, you know, quarterly target so that the stock market, you know, sees the value of my company. You got to feel like somebody's counting on you. Otherwise you won't do it when times get tough.
Totally. And I love the way that you're sort of connecting it to my goals. Cause nobody really gets excited about, oh, we get a $10 million target this year. Oh, I've got to hit X, Y, Z. And then everybody gets their bonus. Like nobody actually, I shouldn't say nobody cares about money, but it is certainly not the most inspiring goal to march towards. And so this is, I love how you're personalizing it and having those customer stories and understanding that sort of noble purpose, it really like brings it all together. And these are all great things that individuals can do. And it's all great in theory, but the sort of management layer is where the rubber meets the road. And so I'm curious, what role does the management team play in this?
Well, if you're a manager listening to this, one of the things you need to understand is you're the second most important person in the life of your team. That's something my father said to me when I first became a manager. And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm only 25 years old. I just wanted a raise. And he said, next to your spouse, your boss can make your life wonderful or make your life miserable. And so one of the things you have to understand is if you're a frontline manager, what the CEO says carries a lot of weight. But you are the voice in the ear of your people. And so the CEO may be up there talking about share price and all this other stuff. They may be up there talking about how they make a difference, but you're the one, your daily life. And so the difference between a seller whose boss asks, when are you going to close it and how much is it going to be? Versus a seller whose boss asks, how is this going to improve life for the customer? That you will get a different is in performance from those. It's not to say the pipeline conversation is not important. It is important, but it's not inspiring at all. It doesn't, the only kind of behavior pipeline conversations usually drive is fear. And fear-based sellers are frantic. You don't want a frantic seller. You want a focused seller. And the way you get a focused seller is ask questions about the customer.
Love it. It reminds me of when we had Jamie Buss on the podcast the first time. I think it was episode 49 or 59, something like that. And she was talking about her pipeline stages and customer verifiable outcomes. And the one that really stuck with me is, why is do nothing off the table? And this seems like just a much better, not I don't know about better, but a lot more a version of that question that's a little bit more tuned to the customer.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you have got to, again, there's also ways that that you can manage your manager. So it's just like if you're, you know, trying to get your spouse to do something, trying to get your kids to do something, and they have this pressing need in the front, this pressing need, whatever the pressing need may be. When are we going to go to dinner? When are we going to go to dinner? When are we? You got to answer it. And if your manager is saying, when are you going to close it? When are you going to close it? You got to get that off the table. Or it's just like a pop-up window in their head. Mm-hmm. And so you want to say, okay, here's a close date. Here's this. Now I want to talk about how this will help the customer. The more you can have that conversation, that will inform your manager's future conversations, that will build up that load-bearing neural pathway in your mind that that's what this is about. It'll get your own talk track solid. It'll make you more compelling.
So as promised, this is that one question that managers need to be
dancing around it.
Yeah, asking. So talk to me about let's just in case people didn't quite pick up on that. Let me ask, is that one question that every manager needs to ask in every engagement?
If you are looking, I'm going to give you one question that will improve sales rep performance and improve the reliability of your pipeline. It is one question. If the manager asks, when you're discussing an opportunity, if the manager asks, how will the customer be different as a result of doing business with us? If you ask that one single question, that will tell you everything. If your rep doesn't know, they're not ready to go make a sales call. If your rep doesn't know and they say this is an 80% likely to close, they're wrong. If your rep has a great story, then you know that. But asking, the reason that this does two things. One, it's a litmus test to tell you how accurate that pipeline is, the rep's knowledge of that. But it's also a coaching question, because when you say, how will the customer be different as a result of doing business with us, the rep puts their mind where it's meant to be on the customer impact. And so that, if you do nothing else from this podcast, if you start asking your reps that question, it will open up just so much better sales performance, and you'll have a much better predictor on your pipeline.
I'll add on this. It is such a great barometer. We've been asking the, you know, why is do nothing off the table question. And mm-hmm. to me, that was just a total game changer, but really we're asking the same question just with different words. And it's one of those things that brought the qualification methodology and the pipeline stages to life. It's like, I finally have like having those one single question that I can ask for each stage in my pipeline to help me triangulate, like, does the rep actually have this deal? Is it actually real? Mm-hmm. Having these for each stage are so critical. And having this one question here, I think we mm-hmm. move it from solution review to solution validation. And if it's in solution validation, the rep can clearly articulate why do nothing is off the table. And that's typically, you know, how is the customer going to benefit by doing something? And hopefully that something is with us, but you know, why are they going to benefit from doing something as opposed to nothing? It's been the single most impactful question that we've asked.
I believe it. And that's, we ask it in a very, very specific way. How will the customer be different? Because if you can articulate that, a lot of times when we say how will the customer benefit, it's a good question, but it's easy to kind of shirk on that answer. Well, they'll have our solution. They'll be that. It'd be really generic. Mm-hmm. But you want to look your rep in the eye and say, I want a before and after. How are they going to be different? Because that's what's going to spur the customer to act. And if the rep doesn't know, then you're still in discovery, which is okay, but don't go pitching because you don't have a very good pitch yet.
I totally agree. Lisa, it's been amazing having you on the show. Thank you so much. We're getting, and I know we talked about this before. You're not cold calling on quite the regular basis, but this is my chance to put you through the ringer a little bit. So let's jump into the cold call.
Oh, you told me. Oh, I got to make a cold call.
Yeah. So talk to me about, and I'll be gentle. We're having fun here. This is just a fun way.
I'm going to do the cold call, but I do want to pause. And I used to do cold calls all the time, but I do want to tell the listeners one of the things that happened to us when we started having clarity about how we made a difference to customers. And we started putting it out there in videos and white papers and things like that. People started calling us.
Beautiful.
So, that was great, but I'm up for it.
All right. So let's get into the call. What's my persona? What kind of company do I work for? What's my job title?
So most of the people that I would talk to for a first time that might not be that prepared to talk to me would probably be a CEO.
Okay. And any type of company?
It can be any type of company. What I would do before I called them, I probably would have had some sort of referral, but if I didn't, I would know their biggest issue. I would have done my homework and I would know the biggest issue based on my just looking at online.
Okay. That sounds great.
You can tell me whatever kind of company you want. We'll go for it.
Let's say a mid-sized software company.
Okay.
$5 to $10 million in revenue.
Okay, great.
Perfect. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. Lisa McLeod.
Hey, Lisa.
I wanted to give you a call today because I've been spending a little bit of time on your website looking at what your sales team is doing. I was really impressed. And what struck me is that you're really in a critical spot. And if you want to take it to the next level, differentiation is probably going to be the most important thing to you. And so I wanted to see if you had time to have a conversation about that.
I could have some time, but why would that be important to me?
Well, I looked at who all your competitors are and I looked at the story that you're telling online. I think it's good. But when I dug a deeper dive into some of your customer testimonials, I think that your team could probably do a better job of explaining why you're different. And it would probably help you close deals faster and they'd probably be higher margin.
And you guys help with that?
We absolutely do. I'm the author of a book called Selling with Noble Purpose. And we have helped some teams double and quadruple revenue over a very short period of time. I think your company has a lot of potential.
Thanks for the call, Lisa. I think that's definitely a worthwhile conversation.
Great. That's what I got.
There we go. See, I was gentle. Not so scary.
Well, I think one of the things that, as I think about this, you had told me we were going to do it, and honestly, I forgot. But one of the things that I think is important here is if you are calling on someone of a senior level, it really should not be a cold call. Even if you can't get a referral or an intro, you better have done your homework and you better have some compelling business issue. And I recognize that if you've got to churn out, you know, so many calls a day, you don't have as much time. And so one of the things that we suggest when we deal with teams like that, and if you listen, I did it here, is you say something about the customer. Differentiation might be a real challenge for you. You say something about yourself. We've got expertise in helping people that with that. And then you ask a question of the customer. How are you addressing that challenge now? So you don't go into some big, long pitch.
Gotcha. I feel like, I'm sorry, I keep looking at my door because the barbarians are at the gates. We get the twins out. They're about to go down for their lunchtime nap and they are, they know I'm in here and they can hear me talking.
You know, one of the things I love about this new world that we're in, 20 years ago, I had to pretend I didn't have children at home while I was working, and now we're all over it and it's great.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So you can probably hear, you know, yeah, them on the other side.
Oprah had people in the background on her podcast, so we're good.
Awesome. Awesome. Lisa, if people want to learn more about your books, about your company, about the ways that you help people, the outcomes that you help people achieve, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Our website's easy to find. Google Selling with Noble Purpose. We will pop up and there is an explainer video on our website. Show it to your VP of sales and say, do you want this? And they'll either say yes or no and call us.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Great to be here.
Right on. And thanks everybody for listening and stay tuned until next week. See you then. All right. Shout out to Predictable Revenues, Service LinkedIn Outbound, Service for sponsoring this video. As a founder and sales leader myself, I know most of the best practices in terms of like what I need to be doing on LinkedIn, but sometimes I just don't have the time. You know what the right things to do are, but it just comes down to a trade-off of where's my time better spent? And can I find somebody to click around on LinkedIn for me and book meetings, you know, and then I can focus on higher level activities. And so think about it. What's the best use of your time? If you're a founder, sales leader, and you have a team, you need some meetings, I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm using it myself. I'm obviously the founder, so I'm eating our own dog food. But if you're curious, click the link below to learn more.